everybody. It's wonderful to see everybody back here. We're excited to be back together. It's been 3 whole weeks since we've seen each other, which seems like a luxurious amount of time. And now we're ready to kick off the next phase of the work that our group has in front of us, which is programs.
So I'd like to say good evening and welcome as well. I would echo what Jessica said. It feels like it's been a long time since we've been together. And as we move forward, we've done our work with the corridors. We'll be hearing more about that from our Metro counselors. And now we're going to be working toward programs and programmatic issues throughout the region. It seems like it will be a little bit easier, maybe something we can wrap our heads around a little bit easier. So I'm looking forward to that. Allison, you're over here, but I think it's your turn to do some housekeeping.
Yes, absolutely. So, folks, as you recall, in the unlikely event of an emergency, we go down the stairs and we meet in the plaza directly behind us. There is a fire extinguisher located in the back behind Hannah. Hi, Hannah. Who's taking notes? And restrooms are down the hall and to your left. There's also a water fountain there that you can fill up a water bottle in case we run out of water in the pitchers located outside. Folks, just a note for those who are turning in public testimony cards. Our agenda is slightly different this evening, as you might have noticed. We're going to hear an update from counselors first and then move into our public comment period. So if you're here to give public comment, just know that it'll come a little later on our agenda this evening, but we'll get to those shortly. And I think that's all that I can think of for housekeeping. I'll turn it back over to our chairs.
Okay. Thank you, Allison. So as you know, after our last meeting in May, staff put together a summary of our conversations and our work, which they brought to council to help support the decision that council had to make about which corridors to put into Tier 1 and which corridors to put into Tier 2. And we're very lucky today to have Councilors Lewis and Gonzalez here to talk about the process that they went through in making the decision on how to divide up those corridors and what to move forward with. So we're going to hear from them. And if we have time when they're done, we can do a little Q&A if you have some more specific questions for them. So with that, please go ahead and take it away.
Sure, thank you. My name is Christine Lewis. I'm a Metro Councilor representing the communities of District 2. And it is my role first and foremost to again thank you for your time and commitment to this task force. I've been here several times and know not only how much time you spent here, but in preparation and in conversations around this issue.
And hola a todos. My name is Juan Carlos Gonzalez, and I am a counselor for District 4, Washington County, representing. I am coming off a week at Glacier National Park, and I'm just, you know, as beautiful as it was, very ready to be here with you.
So we know this work isn't easy, and we know we're asking a lot of you, and in particular, the makeup of this committee can seem challenging at times, but each of you bring your own experience, your own ways of getting around, your own expertise on your communities, and that's why you're here. Considering a package of investments that will be able to be brought forward to the ballot is far more challenging than even putting together the most perfect policy package, and we appreciate all of you in taking on this work. So we're here not just to say this thank you yet again, but in order to give you a high-level report back on our conversation at council.
Yeah. So I've been at most of the meetings, sitting in the back, snapping, listening. And I understand that the corridor process has been challenging because it's different. You know, when I have an opportunity to speak with Council President Lynn Peterson, she talks about a paradigm shift in the way that we're designing this measure. And I want to echo that the work that we're doing is to help center the needs that we have on a corridor and the needs of the communities that live, work, and play here, rather, and this is important, rather than starting from the question, what projects do we already have ready, which is the way that the transportation measures have traditionally been done. So let's break from that, and that's what we're doing here.
Yeah. So, you know, we've started from the perspective of looking out what do we need And here tonight, we're looking forward to the next phase, where things may not be any easier in terms of identifying what we need, but they should be less abstract, because the corridors have gotten a little abstract. But back to the conversation we had at council. Staff brought council a summary of your conversation, including the task force values, the narrowing process that you went through to get 60 corridors to 75 to 29, and the results of the May 29th meeting. Council's discussion included shared priority to ensure that the package overall addresses our climate change challenges, and acknowledgement that the way to do that is through advancing a better transit system. Mm-hmm. And our discussion also include acknowledgement that the Southwest Corridor investment is one project that we know that we are doing, and that is the key transit investment for the 2020 measure.
Yeah. Alongside that, advancing outcomes for people of color in this region is a major outcome for me, like I know it is of a lot of our peers here and for my colleagues on council. And I was pleased to see that a lot of the corridors that made it through the process have the potential to improve access and safety to people of color in the region. You know, as you know, our council is elected by people in the region, so we want to make sure that this measure is regional by nature, and I know you keep hearing that. But for me, that means giving Clackamas and Washington County the chance to reduce greenhouse gases just as much as Multnomah County. Like I said, Washington County represent. I want to serve people of color in Cornelius as much as I want to serve people of color in East Portland. Their experiences are different but interconnected. And that means that things will look different from place to place, and generally our council is okay with that. As long as the overall package meets the outcomes that we as a council identified and you as a task force have identified. For me, one, centering this on racial justice and our racial equity strategy, because this measure needs to address the historic inequities and disparities perpetuated from the last few decades of investments. And like all of the advocates have said, we have 12 years to address our climate change issue, and we're not going to make a bigger investment in transportation, one of the main causes of greenhouse gas emissions in the next 12 years. So this is what we have to do.
So recognizing those values, and after a long discussion, council directed staff to move forward with 13 corridors. Southwest Corridor, TV Highway, McLaughlin Boulevard, 82nd Avenue, Burnside from Sunset Transit Center to Mount Hood Community College, Southwest 185th, 122nd, 162nd, Powell Boulevard, and downtown Portland.
And while eventually the projects on every corridor need to align, the council wants to make sure that they are worked through the local investment teams. And, you know, it's important to me because I've heard a lot of people express to me in private and at this table, like, what's going on with this Tier 1 process? It seems that some corridors aren't aligning or don't have the values as connected as others, and it feels like we're just pushing them through, right? Specifically, C2C, Clackamas to Columbia, the Sunrise Corridor, and I-5. In this process, you know, we want to make sure the projects improve safety and connectivity and that the greenhouse gas emissions are reduced for every single corridor. And we're looking forward to giving the local investment teams the opportunity to really propose projects that meet those standards that you've set, that we've set. And I'm not going to support a project that doesn't meet those standards. So we've passed that information on. And for the I-5 North Corridor, we've renamed it to the Albina Vision Project and emphasized that any possible funding for the corridor is dedicated to improving the safety and connectivity in the Albina neighborhood. So I look forward to working on that with you.
Sure. So some of the other conversation that we had was around both Clackamas to Columbia and Sunrise Corridor, both of which are the Clackamas County elements, I think, drove the most discussion at this table. Clackamas County is in a place where they are just catching up to where the other two counties have been. Before Councilor Gonzalez and I were even born, your two counties stepped up and came up. Well, yes, many people at the table were born, some of us weren't. Stepped up and had local funding mechanisms, which means they've you're lapping us in Clackamas County. But what I'm looking at is a county that really wants to do the right thing and really needs the opportunity to do the work. And if we're going to make the opportunity for Clackamas County to have transit, to have people be able to get around, particularly the east-west connectivity, we're going to need to have this conversation at the LIT level. You know, if I want to take the bus to Metro from my house, I'm like as well situated as could be living in Clackamas County. I can walk 2 blocks to a bus stop. I'm served Monday to Friday hourly, and between 93 minutes and 112 minutes, I'll get to Metro. But I have to leave my desk here 5:15 at the latest, or else I'm stranded and don't get my last bus home. So it's not only a matter of service, but this is a conversation that many in my community can't have because they don't have that last mile, that last bit of connectivity. So the challenges in Clackamas County are real, and I feel confident that not only the programmatic piece, but continued investigation of the corridors in Clackamas County will help inform how Clackamas can step up with this measure.
You know, man, I keep wanting to stray away from these. Good old talking points, right? You know, tackling climate change in my first year in this measure and with all of you is daunting. And even sitting here within this table of professionals is nerve-wracking. But it's also exciting. And, you know, as we do this work, damn it, our generation has to do something about it. You know, when I look into the future, I want to make sure that people have safe options to travel. And, you know, like, I don't want that to become a phrase that we just throw around at this table, because I see people running across TV Highway at rush hour just to catch a bus. That's not right. I want people to have clean air and clean water, and that's not something that we can take for granted. And people have to spend less time in traffic, traveling, and need to have more time with their loved ones. You know, at the end of the day, we need the funding that this measure provides. Like, we know that. We need this funding, and we need to move the region in the right direction, but we need to do it with the right vision. And I'm not willing to leave parts of our region behind, and I hope that you help us move in that direction. It's our responsibility as a regional transportation funding task force to think about that regional growth and that regional connectivity and emphasis on the regional. Our region has never successfully passed a transportation measure at the regional scale of this type. We've tried, but we haven't been able to do it. And I think that November 2020 is an excellent chance for us to present a vision to the voters that addresses climate change, that helps move our region in the right direction without necessarily relying on vehicles. And we know that the public has entrusted in us what we have to do. So the real work begins now.
Yep, the real work begins now, and I think that the work being done with the LITs to make sure that we have voices from every corner of our community talking about the solutions, both for transportation and climate change, that can really step up and make a difference. It's going to look different in some of our corners than it looks in downtown Portland, but I believe that we can make the difference, and we're going to be part of the solution. Our whole council is deeply committed to this work. We're putting resources and hundreds of hours of work into this in order to make it successful. We're also putting our political capital on the line, and we're being real that we're going to the ballot next November in 2020. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your work, both here, but also helping to develop the messages so that we can convince voters that whatever package we put forward is worth their vote.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time, and I'm excited to hear your questions, and let's get this process moving.
Yep. So we have time for questions at this point. I'd like you to please follow the system we've been working with. If you have a question, put your card up, please. Tim.
Thank you. Mr. Gonzalez, how many full-time jobs are there in Washington County?
I need to ask my amazing staff. Mm-hmm. I know they'd know that number.
I don't know for the county, for Clackamas County either. I know between Tualatin and Wilsonville, there's about 45,000 full-time jobs, many of them in the higher-paying wage sectors. not everybody in the region is trying to get to downtown Portland. An awful lot of our economy and our economic health is dependent on jobs and industries that lie around the city, not just in the city. A system that works for the entire region is going to have to connect all of those jobs to each other. They're going to have to allow ways for people to get from where they live to where they work to where they go to school. Our system as currently configured does not accomplish that. We do not have alternative options for many, many, many of our citizens. And until we invest in a system that provides those linkages, we are going to be hard-pressed to actually reduce vehicle miles traveled, to actually get people out of single-occupant vehicles and get them into some other modes. So from my perspective, I think we need to be really talking very aggressively about where the biggest holes in those systems are and how we interconnect all those different elements around our metro region. And I wish I felt stronger that this corridor concept was headed toward accomplishing that. This T2020 cannot and will not solve all the problems we have. It just isn't big enough, and there's too many problems. So obviously we have to try to address problems that we can and make it attractive enough so people want to vote for it. It's very necessary to move it forward. I hope that we can move into having more dialogue about how we build systems across the region and not be parochial about how we go about that. So, didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to provide a perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree. I think we not only have an opportunity to talk about our capital investments, but our programmatic investments are a key conversation around the issues that you portray. I mean, I experienced that in Washington County and my part of Washington County and the part that I grew up. So, I look forward to having that conversation at this table.
Stephen?
I actually have a question also for Councilor Gonzalez about your vacation.
Yes, I almost died.
I had the privilege about 10 years ago going to Glacier National Park. It's an amazing place if you haven't been. And we had the extraordinary privilege on one of those park tours of having an 85-year-old park ranger emeritus lead the tour, and he pointed up to the mountain, and in his lifetime pointed at where the glacier had receded, I recall, some 25% or 30%. So my question is, how does the glacier look today?
So in 1911, there were 100 active glaciers, and today there are 26 active glaciers. By the time that I have grandchildren, almost all of the glaciers could be gone. So it's the scale of the problem. It's incredibly grounding just to be in that space and to be on the front lines of climate change. And just to think that beauty cannot be there in a generation is, I mean, one more catalyst for action.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know that you were on script and needed to be, but it's sometimes hard to catch the nuances when speaker's head are down and reading. So I would really appreciate it if you could repeat what corridors came out of Metro as recommendations and what, if any, did not.
Sure. So I will read the list again because I don't have them memorized.
Oh, that's fine.
But the council directed staff to follow up on the corridors, very similar in recommendation to the one that received the most votes from the task force. So you didn't actually achieve your three quarters, but the one that the complete package received the most votes. So Southwest Corridor, TV Highway, McLaughlin, 82nd, Burnside, 185th, 122nd, 162nd, Powell, and Downtown, And then Councilor Gonzalez didn't fully list the next four. He was very narrative and values driven. But he is my friend. Clackamas to Columbia, 181st, Sunrise Corridor, were also advanced.
So C2C and Highway 212, but the I-5 downtown Portland was not?
Yes.
I-5 was renamed.
It's called the Albina
Vision.
That's
the Albina.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically the 13 that the task force sent to you have been advanced to the next stage.
Yes. Most of the corridors were recommended at around, I think, 66%, but they did not reach the three-quarters threshold to make a formal recommendation. So council took most of that and made the formal recommendation back to the task force.
Was there anything then that didn't go forward as a recommendation from council, Metro Council?
No.
Okay.
And we took the full tier two list as well.
Yeah. The full tier two list.
Yeah. That part of the talking points was more so the process that the task force had agreed upon is, although it wasn't reached, we were still moving that forward. That's essentially.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you so much, councilors, for joining us tonight. It was great having you here, and thanks for talking about the process that you went through.
We'll be sticking around, and we kind of lurk in the back, but we've been listening, and I just want to highlight Councilor Stacy is also a lurker tonight.
I want to express my thanks as well to the two of you, to Councillor Stacy, and to the other councillors who have actively been engaged in coming to the meetings. All of your presence has been noted and appreciated, so thank you very much. We took the time to have the councillors make this presentation before oral communication so that the folks here that were going to make statements had the opportunity to hear and maybe adjust what you'd like to say. So with that, Allison?
All right, so we will open up our public comment period. We are going to give 2 minutes per public comment based on the amount of folks that we had sign up. We have 10 requests for public comment this evening. So, members of the public, you will notice that if you've signed up, your name is on the list, and there's one on the next page. So just ask, we'll go in this order, if you know that you're next, if you can be waiting in the wings. And it's a little tight on this side. Linda and I are very close, so I think we'll sit at this side of the table to give folks a little bit more room, so I'll move over there. I'll move where Andy is, and we'll do public comment on that side if Andy's okay with that, so that folks can feel like they have some space. So just come follow me, and we'll do 2 minutes. Again, if you've seen this happen before, we do time it, so we just ask that you keep your comments succinct to that 2-minute time period and be waiting if you are next on the list. So we'll kick things off with Jonathan, followed by Jim.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Cruz, and I'm an organizer for Participatory Budgeting Oregon. I work on transforming government spaces and institutions to become responsive and accountable to the needs of communities. One of the most difficult tasks placed before the council and the task force is how to develop programs that connect the priorities that people have set with the priorities that elected officials have set for the region. And instead of placing communities in adversarial models of accountability with their government, Participatory Budgeting Oregon would like to encourage the task force to consider using a participatory democratic process as a way to bridge those time-worn relationships. Participatory budgeting is a deliberative democratic process in which people directly allocate a portion of their budget through a binding vote. Metro must consider the need for inclusive dynamism in our regional democracy in order to solve the complex issues and problems that we've inherited from a racist and violent history of exclusion. There are individuals with an appetite for civic life, and they can push us all to be smarter and effective in the management of our city's transportation services. A participatory budgeting process could build strong leaders and experts by increasing the community's capacity to directly address ecological and social crises through transportation infrastructure and community-led programming. When empowered by flexible investments of their government or from their government in a participatory process, people can explore, experiment, and exchange ideas, and can develop creative decisions about how the collective stewardship of, or I'm sorry, can, they can develop creative decisions about the collective stewardship of our urban and natural environments. A transportation participatory budgeting process would need to build upon and potentially connect with the work in the PB process that was placed in the Parks and Nature Bond. Beyond program specifics, it's most important that the funds from each bond are intersectional and meet the goals of overcoming climate change, much like how housing, nature, and transportation intersect in our daily lives and affect the overall livability of everyone in the metro region. Thank you.
All right, Jim, you're up next.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Labby. I'm also with Participatory Budgeting Oregon. I'm speaking on behalf of our organization, but also of Eddie Morales, who serves on is one of our advisors. And I just came from a meeting with him, and he deputized me to speak for him. So as John said, participatory budgeting is a deliberative democratic process wherein the community can allocate a portion of a municipal budget through a binding vote. It's a process that's authorized, co-designed with the community and authorized by elected officials. It started in Brazil in the late 80s and has spread around the world to well over 3,000 jurisdictions. It's come to the United States in 2009, actually started in Vivian's home ward in Chicago. And it's spread across the U.S. It came to the Northwest the last few years, but it has yet to come to Oregon. On June 6th, the Metro Council demonstrated its leadership to experiment with this democratic tool by incorporating a portion of the Green Spaces Bond measure to a piloting participatory budgeting. And I'm here today to ask you all to strongly consider doing, or recommending doing the same in the transportation bond measure. Last night we heard from a planner from this woman, Amy Nguyen, who came down from Seattle. It's actually the second time she's come down here and shared Seattle's experience with participatory budgeting, where they do between $2 and $3 million a year for parks and streets. So if we got them in both bonds and both passed, the region would be well positioned to replicate something like what Seattle has been doing, and we can learn a lot from what Seattle is doing. They're really on the leading edge of using PB to operationalize the racial equity strategy within the city. So I think that particularly we have a lot we can learn from Seattle. So thank you for the time, and I look forward to the continuing conversation.
Matthew?
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Matthew Williams. I'm here with Portland Southeast in Active Motion. Thank you for your time on this project. And I'm here to urge you to invest in a sustainable future through the minimization of greenhouse gas emissions to soften the impending impacts of the climate crisis. I encourage you to do that through low-impact transportation. To that end, I encourage you to please build out the regional bicycle trails network. So the first point is, please fund construction of the Reedway Overpass, RTP 11819 in Southeast Portland, across the McLaughlin Corridor. And two, expand the proposed Lake Oswego Oak Grove Bridge, RTP 10085, to include one lane of transit service with signals on both ends of the bridgehead to permit safe access for transit and emergency responders, particularly in the case of a seismic event. Three, allow Metro Council to take over responsibility for the project delivery of the regional trails, bicycle trails program, including design, engineering, construction, and operations for all portions where local jurisdictions cannot deliver within the next 5 years. The Reedway Overpass fills the largest multimodal connectivity gap in Portland, east of the Lana River and south of the Columbia Slough, accounting for a 2.1-mile gap between the Lafayette Bridge and the Bybee Overpass. The only other east-west connection is Holgate Boulevard, which is treacherous if you're not inside a vehicle. Likewise, the Lake Oswego Oak Grove Bridge would provide a much-needed crossing within an over 10-mile gap between the Sola Bridge and the OR-99E crossing between Gladstone and Oregon City. Earlier proposals have called for the bridge to be bike and pedestrian only. I would urge you to please expand transit access here. Thank you for your time and consideration of these matters.
Richa?
Good evening. My name is Richa Perel. I'm here representing the Street Trust as well as the Getting Money Together Coalition, a growing national coalition of over 35 organizations that include organizations working at the intersections of climate, health, housing, transportation, and access to labor and employment, as well as organizations that serve and represent communities that are currently underserved by our transportation system. As you all begin to consider region-wide programs for transportation measure, we simply ask you, as we did with the corridors process, to lead with equity. This means prioritizing access for those who most in need. Access to several things. Access to meaningful employment, access to affordable housing, access for housing to educational opportunities, and access to community spaces. By prioritizing access for communities, we inevitably also prioritize programs that support ways to increase transit ridership and service, as well as safety for those who rely on walking and biking. And as a result, we tackle the emission reductions and climate issues that are so present for us and that have really been brought to the forefront by youth and community in this space. So as we know the potential programs that are in consideration today, we just ask that you ask these questions. Does this program have the potential to increase access to transportation options? To what extent and for whom? Thank you. Shanice?
Greetings all and happy Juneteenth. I'm Shanice Brittany Clark, an educator and board director with Opal Environmental Justice. I am here today because I can't prepare my students for their future while they're actively being pushed out of their neighborhoods. Many of my students, just like myself, are transit-dependent people. Juneteenth is an especially important day for me to make this statement, the day where the last black slaves were told they were free. But many manifestations of that oppression still persist. To name one, Portland's urban renewal efforts have gentrified and displaced black people, including my students, into areas that increase sickness and risks to safety. I've had asthma for most of my life, and black youth are 10 times more likely to die from asthma. Students' families are pushed out closer to these pollutants that increase conditions like asthma. And transit is a fundamental human right. The way we think about it just needs to be different. It's a lifeline for many people in this city. For many of my students, it can mean the difference between a job, safe housing, or their own education. Transportation inequities are particularly pervasive manifestations of injustice, as they directly result in a lesser quality of life. Transit justice is climate justice, education justice, and racial justice. Despite such a large tax dollar investment, frontline communities significantly are excluded from the very decision-making tables that shape their day-to-day lives. And I'm here to be up with riders, and we demand free and fairless transportation, dedicated bus-only lanes, service expansion to the communities pushed to the edges of our region facing the harshest impacts of gentrification, and a rider advocate program as an alternative to policing. Do the right thing because this bond presents the possibility for our communities to live dignified lives, and don't pass up this opportunity to do more than benefit just only a wealthy few, end the criminalization of poor people on these buses, and help Portlanders and folks around this region have access to clean air and that we deserve. Thank you.
Susan?
Good evening. My name is Susan Bladholm, and I'm the founder and president of Friends of Frog Ferry. We are a grassroots, nonprofit effort of over 1,000 supporters and stakeholders, and we are championing equity and access for all. Our supporters include business leaders, community advocates, transportation planners, elected officials, and residents. and I have with me today 80 letters of support to share with all of you, representing a number of companies and associations and individual citizens like each one of us. We have 8 teams of industry leaders providing expertise. I'm here to talk to you today about adding a new mode of transportation thinking, river transit. Every major river city in the nation has some sort of ferry service, except for Portland. Ferries work so well that most of these cities are expanding their service, and we're working with different markets, such as Kitsap County and King County out of Seattle and San Francisco and the Potomac, and the list goes on. They're all very willing to help us with their expertise. A commuter ferry service from Vancouver to Portland could include 9 potential stops along the Willamette as well as on the other side of the Columbia, which would reduce congestion, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, remove thousands of cars from the roads every day, build resiliency and emergency response, enhance community livability, and provide jobs and connect workers to our workplaces. For 2 years now, we've worked with our public transit agencies, since no public transit agency wants to lead this effort, and ask for you to support this bold initiative so we can fund feasibility studies and tap into the federal FTA funding for capital construction. You know, we all know, that an effective transportation system works best when there are multiple ways for people to get around. And it's time we buck the status quo and innovate to include a ferry service in your T2020 package. Thank you. And next, Cassandra.
I say Cassandra. I think Cassandra sounds better, if any of you have also been wondering. Hi, I'm Cassandra Griffin. I'm with the Community Cycling Center. I'm the executive director there, and I'm also a member, along with Richa, of the Getting There Together Coalition. The Community Cycling Center is a 25-year-old organization that believes everyone deserves to be able to get where they need to go affordably. We don't do a lot of political advocacy as an organization, but we're here at this table now because this transportation measure is so big, it's making critical decisions about our region's future, and we feel compelled to step up and speak up and make sure that it takes us in the right direction. Thank you all for being part of it. I join Richa and the Street Trust and the other members of the Getting There Together Coalition to ask you to prioritize equity in all of your decisions here. And when we say equity, we mean prioritizing improving outcomes for marginalized people. That includes people of color, people living on low incomes, basically the people who are least well served by the current transportation system. We're talking about the people who can't get to their jobs and their families and their schools and their grocery stores and grandma's house because the buses don't run often enough. We're talking about the people who are most likely to be run over by cars crossing the street because they live on big streets and there aren't enough crossings. Also people who are most likely to get run over riding their bikes because they're riding in neighborhoods that aren't built up for great alternative transportation systems. We're talking about the people who are most likely to get asthma, and as a result of living with that chronic condition that is caused by particulate matter from freeways, they're not able to run and jump and go hiking and throw their kids in the air the way they want to. We're also talking about the people who are most likely to be displaced, and so we wanted to bring that up also. Too many people have already been pushed out of our region against their will, and it's critical that this transportation funding measure also be talking about and thinking about and prioritizing anti-displacement efforts. So please think about that as you go into programs. We'll keep showing up and talking about it, but anti-displacement needs and housing affordability needs to be folded into this measure also. Thank you all.
All right, next up is Orlando, followed by Tristan, and then I'm going to flip the page over, and I believe it's Bradley on the next page.
Good evening. My name is Orlando Lopez, and I'm a community organizer with Opal Environmental Justice and Bus Riders Unite. Today, we announce the beginning of a new campaign, Up With Riders, a campaign for major service improvements, bus prioritization projects, rider advocates, and a federal system. We are in a critical moment right now. We have the opportunity to advance a bold plan and begin the just transition in our transportation system from private cars to public transportation. Or we can do more of the same failed policies that will not reduce congestion, that will not reduce emissions, that will contribute to a worsening climate, and that will not increase transit ridership. Our transportation system is a lifeline that allows us to connect to education opportunities, jobs, housing, healthcare, green spaces, and the many things that we need to live a healthy life. But people have a number of barriers that have to be overcome to use our transit services to access opportunities. With Upless Riders is a long-term plan. It is an ambitious vision of what that we ask you to join us in fighting for. The task force has the ability to recommend the necessary steps to achieve this vision, and we're more than happy to work with you every step of the way. As the local investment teams begin to meet, let's get buses out of traffic through dedicated bus lanes, traffic signal priorities, and other tools to keep our buses moving. Let's identify additional places where bus lines need to be implemented. The West Side and Southeast service enhancement plans need to be updated to meet the growing demands and the lack of service in those areas. Washington County, Clackamas County, and East Portland need the level of investment to see in the that we see in the urban core. This measure will provide another windfall of revenue for TriMet. This body should get a firm commitment from TriMet that they will not increase fares and instead must provide a plan that will increase ridership and decrease barriers to riding for transit-dependent communities. On May 15th, TriMet presented a poor attempt at such a plan, which lacks a vision and, with the exception of a few ideas, will not increase ridership. Thank you.
Justin?
Good evening. My name is Tristan. I'm here with Bus Riders Unite, Portland's Transit Riders Union, whose membership I represent on TriMet's Transit Equity Advisory Committee. The proposed 2020 transportation bond is poised to raise tens of billions of dollars and represents a vital opportunity to decide the direction our region will take with regards to transit in the coming decades. Put simply, we're about to go on a journey together. Our destination is safe and healthy communities in a vibrant and growing metropolitan area. Of course, as the saying goes, it's the journey. How you get there is at least as important as where you're going, maybe more. Indeed, if your vision, your strategy, as you set out, impacts whether you arrive at all, our region is growing, and as it does, we need radical imagination to envision a transportation system that can support it. If you follow the strategies of the past, it will lead to more of the same: congested roads, unsafe streets, and dirty air. A robust and accessible public transportation system represents a real solution to all these issues. Unfortunately, TriMet, our regional public transit agency, lacks a vision to grow ridership and service. Instead, they want to raise fares and bet on unproven electrification technology and costly light rail projects that continue to underperform while driving up their debt obligations. We at Bus Riders Unite have an alternative proposal. If you've read the Mercury, you're probably already in the know, but we want to make transit free for everyone. But it can't happen in a vacuum. TriMet will tell you that free transit is possible, but only by cutting service. We actually disagree. We believe the opposite. If we were to make transit free, our current system couldn't handle the number of people getting on our buses and trains. So what we need is an expansion of service. In addition to removing financial barriers to access, we are demanding increase in service, including more frequency, multimodal access, and new bus lines with bus-only lanes, transit signal priority, to improve reliability and attract even more riders. The transportation bond is the missing piece. The leaders in this room have an obligation to support public transportation that is increasingly accessible, equitable, and robust. You all have your own vision, but we at Bus Riders Unite are all transit-dependent people who ride the system every day and organize together. We know best what we need from our public transportation system. We call upon you to fund an expansion of our regional bus network, enhance transit corridors, and multimodal integration with a commitment from TriMet to no fare hikes, youth pass for all, and eventually a fully fareless public transportation system. With a vision of Bus Riders Unite, TriMet's operational expertise and resources from Metro, we can fund a fareless future. Thank you.
And Brad?
There you are. Brad Perkins, CEO of Cascadia High Speed Rail. Thanks for providing the time, although it's just 2 minutes. This is a letter that I wrote to Chair Lynn Anderson last month, and I'll just take snippets of it. As you are aware, CHSR has been working for 12 years on a new corridor planning for both the Rose Corridor to Gorge Trail along I-84 and Cascadia High Speed Rail in the I-5 right-of-way. Each corridor concept plan has been studied, engineered, to a point that is ready for an environmental impact statement. In Washington and British Columbia, they were working aggressively towards high-speed rail development. They even have a what they call Cascadia Innovation Corridor that they've put together. They're working with high-tech industry and higher education and government people up there to make it happen, and it's coming down here. But why is it that Oregon Metro and City of Portland are not taking high-speed rail seriously when it will dramatically reduce CO2 emissions, relieve congestion, and help create a new settlement pattern for the Northwest with station areas becoming the new centers for growth? All attempts that I have made respectfully tried to make you other metro councillors and planners regarding this international method of sustainability, travel, and growth have been ignored. Proven throughout the world for over 50 years, high-speed rail is fast, reliable, seductive. Locally, CHSR has the ability to move 16,000 people per hour in 6 minutes to Vancouver, Washington, and 10 minutes to Bridgeport from the Rose Quarter. In comparison to Knox, CHR has 4 times the capacity and travels in 1/4 of the time to its destinations. I've hired TEMS, which is in Maryland, to do an economic analysis as well as get registered with the Federal Rail Administration with our corridor plan. Okay. I'm currently working with Oregon legislatures to transfer $450 million for the I-5RQ boondoggle to instead build a new hybrid bridge over the Columbia River with CHSR, freight rail, and cars and trucks for the Columbia River, just west of the existing BNSF bridge. I've met with many state representatives and senators on this and have over 20 supporters thus far. In conclusion, the public wants CHRLLC, more critical review and studies of transportation project costs, benefits, and impacts. Improved system reliability and speed to move more people and goods has been the most important concern for people when they vote for funding major transportation improvement projects. But what is most climate smart and accomplishes climate justice is fast becoming the ultimate importance for our children's future. Exclusive corridors for electrified, safe, and fast CHSR transit aggressively meets that challenge. I'm sorry if I took too much time, but the children really want to hear this. Thank you.
All right, with that, we'll close public comment and turn it back over to our chairs.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you for the public comment. It is always enlightening, and I know all of us appreciate the opportunity to hear from the public. So thank you very much for taking your time and communicating with us. I'd also like to remind you that it's particularly helpful if you put your comments in writing so that we have them as well. And I did note that the large packet that's going around the room about the Frog Ferry is going to be scanned and sent to each of us, so you'll have that as well.
Okay, great. So thank you, Pam, and thank you everyone who came in and testified tonight. So we're at a bit of an inflection point, at a transition moment in our ongoing process of the work of this advisory committee. So we wanted to take some time now to talk about the work that we're going to be doing over the next 3 months, and so Andy's going to be talking about that. But before he starts doing that, I wanted to just take a couple minutes to reflect on what we've done so far and what we've been able to accomplish. I was so glad to have Councilors Lewis and Gonzalez here tonight to talk about the decision that went through Metro Council in terms of the corridors that we recommended, because that was a hard thing. It was a hard thing for our task force to really grapple with how we come to terms with our recommendations. It was hard for them to, as elected officials, to balance all the different needs with the limited resources we know that we have. We're not just designing what this policy should look like. We are designing what this policy should look like in a way that we hope that voters will support, which is an even more complex issue. So we went from starting with 60 corridors and then going up to 75 corridors, and now we're at the 13 corridors that we're moving together. And that was a big accomplishment. So I just want us to take a moment to celebrate that, to congratulate ourselves for doing that work, and for all of the effort that we've put together in doing that process. I'm not going to say the hard part is behind us, because we have a lot of hard work to do, but we have gotten through this first piece, which gives me confidence that we're going to be able to take on the hard work that we still have ahead of us. So just I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you. And now we're going to go hear about that hard work that we still do have in front of us.
Great, great.
Right, thanks.
Thank you. Did we walk through this slide already? This is the overview of the evening, that we're going to hear from the councilors, talk a little bit about the corridors and what became of that, and then move into the programmatic discussion. So just a little bit more, I think it's helpful for us to review the overall timeline, each of these meetings, just to remind us, all of us, of where we are. We're in the second bubble, so that's very exciting, in this long march down to a referral. So, of course, we got through a corridor process, and it was challenging. It was a little messy. We couldn't quite achieve the charter required three-quarters vote at this table, but we took forward all of the input and dialogue and the two-thirds majority recommendation to the council, and you heard a bit earlier from the councilors about the discussion they had. We're now entering this next phase of programmatic work, and we hope to spend the next few months really going through the potential areas for programmatic investment. But what happens to the corridors next? What happens to that whole, all that body of work you did? We move into, in the summer, the local investment team process. So as you may recall, we're seating right now three different local investment teams in each of the counties to work with our local jurisdictional partners, with staff, to evaluate projects on the 13 corridors, 11 of the corridors. We already have had a very robust engagement process around Southwest Corridor, and I think we're going to pursue a slightly different process with the Albina project. But the other 11 corridors will have robust evaluation engagement by the local investment teams. We are planning a series of tours, and you are all welcome to attend those tours. There'll be popsicles because it's summertime. We understand that's a lot of activity over the summer, so if you can't, we encourage you to make some of those tours. I think it would be very informative to get out about the region, see various places, hear from our local jurisdictional partners about the visions they have for projects in those areas. But your work over the summer, we hope, will be focused more on the programmatic investment. The work of those local investment teams, however, will come back to this task force in the fall in the form of projects on those corridors with some evaluation of the outcomes from those projects, and we hope to spend the end of September and early October really reviewing all of that and having your input and discussion about how well do the corridors with the projects identified in them square with the values and outcomes that this task force and the Metro Council have set out. So just a reminder, this is the map of the Tier 1 and Tier corridors that got a majority, but not three-quarters, vote of recommendation from the task force. The Metro Council advanced the top 13 corridors that you had been talking about, as well as the next 16 corridors as Tier 2 corridors. A couple notes. You already heard from Councillor Gonzalez that they asked to rename the, what we were calling the I-5 downtown corridor as the Albina corridor. The council also put a couple conditions or notes on the Sunrise and C2C corridors, looking for transit-ready facilities, safe biking, walking options along the corridor, and really had a kind of robust conversation about helping in looking at corridors like that, helping to make investments that don't lead to a place where you're looking at the state of a McLaughlin now or a TV highway now and having to fix challenges that exist on those corridors in a place like Highway 212 in the future. And then in Tier 2, the Council clarified that investments on the I-205 corridor coming out of a measure like this would be focused on connectivity and safety around the freeway right-of-way, not on the project that the state is working on. Again, on those interstate corridors, we expect the state and federal governments to be the people that are funding and advancing those projects. But we want to make sure that regional resources can help get people off those systems in a reasonable way into our communities and address impacts of future pricing or other things on those corridors. So I wanted to pause now, I think, in case there were any further questions about that corridors piece before we move on to programs.
Any questions for Andy? Stephen?
Not a corridor question, but maybe an LIT question, unless we're going to talk a little further about LIT. Yeah. You said a couple of, well, so before what you said previously, I think at our last meeting there was some discussion that there might be two Multnomah County LITs, Portland and Imuktuk, or what, I'm sorry.
Imuktuk is the committee name.
For but I heard you say, three, so I assume that means there's just one Multnomah County LIT?
I believe we're going to ask the members of the Multnomah County local investment team, which is actually slightly bigger, as it turns out, than the other two, to select some of the corridors, and so maybe that provides a little more focus for folks for some of the farther east corridors for one group and a little more focus for another group on the farther west corridors in Multnomah County, because there are a larger number of corridors for that group.
And a follow-up, I thought I heard you say something about Albina Vision would not be part of the LIT discussion process, and if that's right, I mean, what's the general thinking around that?
I don't have a good answer for that right now, just that it didn't seem to be in the right place to bring projects forward to a local investment team, because there's ongoing conversations between all the partners about that project and the best way to advance the Albina Vision as a part of the overall surface project.
And last one, on LIT. When will the task force see the composition of the LITs and a schedule?
As soon as we have it all confirmed, we are literally on the phone every day trying to nail down the members and get their commitment. We're asking for a lot of time from folks over the summertime, and we're getting very good results, but we've had a few people, for a variety of reasons, say they can't make it, so we're trying to make sure we have balanced teams. So as soon as that list is complete, we'll get that out to everybody.
Are there any other questions for... Oh, excuse me, Tim.
Thank you. I'm listening to the verbal proposal. I'm looking at Mr. Shaw's memo dated June 4 in the packet to Metro Council. Eight pages, especially pages 4 and 5 of 8, wherein the staff recommendation is discussed. The Tier 2 corridors, as I read this verbiage, seem to be pretty much dependent on whether money has been spent on them previously. In other words, if there hasn't been money on these corridors previously, probably they're not going to meet the project identification and readiness standards that are outlined in here. So, in fact, we're not looking at a new paradigm on any of these. We're saying if they haven't had investment so far, they're not going to get investment this time. I mean, essentially, that's what that says. There won't be the readiness, whatnot. So something like the Agua Bridge, which is a conceptual that is new and speaks to many of the innovative concerns that I hear in the public testimony, not just tonight, but over multiple meetings, makes me think, you know, I'm not sure we're doing the right thing with those Tier 2 ones. We're saying they're going to be relegated to some lower level where if they've not been invested in heretofore, they won't be invested in again. And so I'm struck by how much of the testimony we've had is really asking for a different paradigm and a transformative kind of a view of our transportation system. And we just have to be clear. If we're going to tell the public that's not what we're doing, then let's just say it. That's not what we're doing here as a committee. If these are the criteria, and this is the way we're going to go about it, we're essentially saying we're not going to move into those kinds of things with this bond measure. And I would just like to understand clearly, and I think we owe it to the public to let them understand clearly, what this intent is, and not you know, prolong a supposition that we are going to invest in something significantly different than what has gone before. Our criteria at the outset was what known corridors have known problems that might be improved by project investment of different types. This is not a formula for a transformative transportation system. This is a formula for augmenting the existing system. And I just think we need to be candid and clear if everybody agrees that's the intent. So can we?
Mina, start.
Well, I think one of the councilors noted earlier, this region has never actually gotten this far in a conversation about advancing funding for transportation. And the comprehensive nature of the array of corridors and the visions that local urbans have for those corridors is beyond anything that we've ever seen. When I first came to Metro, I staffed a committee that was looking at a $300 million transportation measure, and we couldn't get past the criteria of what's regional versus what's local. And so that has been the history of transportation funding discussions in this region. So I would argue that we're on the cusp of a pretty significant proposal. We're very hopeful the work of local investment teams this summer does indeed produce project ideas that go beyond what has been laid out in the regional transportation plan along those corridors, and really helps us identify a suite of investments that can move people around the region while improving safety, improving access to transit, all the goals that have been laid out here. So I think that's the course of work that you've agreed to take on, and that now we're expanding that course of work to a variety of folks this summer and getting involved in our local investment teams. I don't know if you want to add anything.
No, I think you did a good job. I mean, I understand what you're saying and the need to do as much as possible with this process that we're doing. I think we all have that intent and that desire to see that. We do have constraints that we're working with, both in terms of the timeline that we're working under to get things ready to go to the ballot, the fact that we want to see projects that are that we can implement and that will have a benefit in our region as we move forward with it. And just the fact that we're going to be having limited funds to do that as well. And you know, I think the tier one and the tier two is a lower, you know, it is a lower, you said, like, it's almost like it's a lower level. It is a lower level, just because we had to prioritize some of them. And, you know, and this is, I think that if local jurisdictions feel strongly about these, you know, they have the option of moving forward. We wanted to keep that on the table. Metro Council wanted to keep that on the table because we know that all of these are important to different people in the region, and so we wanted to have that option. But I think that, you know, they, using the process that we have, this was the best way that we could move forward with it.
I would just add, we're going to struggle, even with the 13 corridors we've identified, to move projects to a place of readiness where we can commit to the voters. If you invest this much money, we can complete X, Y, and Z projects, and we can give you these outcomes. So it'll be a challenge to put that together, much less the next 16 corridors. We know there are jurisdictions who want to work on some of the tier two corridors and continue to plan those. That might get some of them ready to a place in the fall where you could consider them. It might also get them to a place where you can consider putting planning funds into advancing those corridors and the visions on those corridors. So there may be some way to advance interests with those corridors. The other constraint, I would say, is how much money we're able to identify that voters would be willing to agree to, and that'll be a constraint on the other side of what we can accomplish.
So I'd just like to add a couple points, and then I'd like to ask you a question, Tim, if that's okay. Number one, I think when you're looking at having the 13 corridors in the Tier 1 and then 17 corridors in the Tier 2, that's a lot. That's a lot right there. And I do believe that the work that we're doing will ultimately be transformative. It is a matter of how you define that term as far as transformative. If it's transformative, the way I heard you define it was something that's never happened before has a different viewpoint for transportation than we've ever had before. That's one way to look at it. I think when we're looking at a measure that will be one of the largest measures that we've seen in this region, that's transformative as well. The question I would ask you is, when I look at the Tier 2 corridors regarding the amount of work that's been done to date or the investments that have been done to date, there's a variety across the board here. I don't understand at this point what your concern is. Can you articulate for me what your concern is about the Tier 2?
If I read the bottom couple of paragraphs on page 5 of 8 in the report, I have to surmise that it's saying that if these have not been invested in up till now to get them to the acceptable level of preparedness, they're not going to get funding this time either. I mean, so we're saying unless it's sufficiently far along in our normal processes, our routine processes, it likely won't qualify for funding this time. And I just think that that's an honesty kind of a thing that we have to be able to say, yes, that's our intent. Yes, that's how it's going to work. I mean, let's not lead people on to think that there's some other process if, in fact, that's how the process is going to work. Everything I've heard you three say is true. You know, it's a lot of projects, a lot of money to do it. If everything works out right, it could make significant improvements on existing corridors. It will not lead us down a road to something new, different, a different investment pattern than we have heretofore funded to get things ready. We're following in the same tracks and trying to do more of those same things, to move further along with development of those. So I don't dispute any of the facts that you've recited, but I think we need to communicate to the public clearly, you know, what it is that this process is capable of achieving and what it is that this process is not capable of achieving. And I continue to hear, like I say, a lot of public input that seems to assume that this is on a whole different track that might achieve something entirely different than we're talking about. And I'm trying to be candid with the public. I'm trying to not have unrealistic expectations.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Mark?
Thanks. I would agree with a lot of what Mayor Knapp just said, but I want to come back to something that keeps getting said that is different than what at least I understood at the beginning of the process, which is we keep talking about what we will be able to get the voters to agree to fund. In other words, as if we are going to fund everything we decide to do with a bond measure. My understanding at the beginning of this process was that was going to be a portion of how we were going to fund this, that we were going to attempt to mimic what Los Angeles and Seattle and Denver and other places that have done really, truly transformative transportation system-wide changes have done, which is to stack several different funding mechanisms. Have we completely given up on the idea of seeking other funding mechanisms and we're just going to do whatever we can bond? Because that's continues to be the verbiage every time somebody talks about limited amount of money that we can get the voters to agree to, kind of thing.
So there's a few questions in there. I think the council direction we received is they're interested in seeing funding sources that can help build capital projects that are identified through this process and ongoing resources that can fund programmatic work, the next conversation that we're going to have. So they're not starting with the assumption that the entire measure is bonded. We plan to get later in this process to the question of what funding mechanisms are the right mechanisms to seek. I guess my comments are really trying to set some realism around how much voters are willing to approve in terms of taxes. Whatever form, whatever suite of taxes the task force helps recommend and the council refers to the voters,
There is a limit on what voters are willing to make in terms of investments. That's all I was trying to express in that comment.
Any other questions? Okay.
All right. Let's move on. So there's a little bit of visual thematic going on here. You can see we start with a pedestrian. So there's lots of modes in here. The direction that we've received from council, and I think some of the commentary we've heard here, has led us to look at a variety of descriptions of what programmatic investments could include. So you could think about ongoing programmatic investments, investments that fund Safe Routes to Schools programs. You could think about capital investments, investments that fund the actual safe route that people may take to that school. We have thought of this as an ongoing flexible source of funding. So back to the question of what funding source, you can't use highway restricted resources off of the highway. So we'll have to match up those funding restrictions with purposes and uses that you may want to lay out. But we've been envisioning an ongoing flexible source of funds that can be used in a variety of ways. And after this corridor conversation about achieving goals and needs that are outside of the realm of the corridors that can't be achieved in those 13 specific places, but might help make the proposal to the voters that much more transformative or that much more meaningful throughout the region. And a series of programs that really meet identified community needs. During the regional transportation plan process, we had extensive engagement with communities about their goals. We'll talk about that in just a minute. And then, again, they could be capital investments, they could be non-capital investments. So we're hoping to, as we have started to overview this concept today, get some smaller group discussion from you tonight to begin the process. Come back in July with, given the conversation you have, more detailed concepts that you could play around with. In August, really begin developing more like a framework recommendation for the council that we can hash out in the fall. We're not hoping in this process that you develop to the dollar or cent the exact programs, but really that we can have a conversation here about the outcomes that you want to achieve, the how far we should push in different programmatic areas. We'll probably be using some dot exercises to get priorities later into August, but that's sort of the process that we've envisioned for this. We plan to do ongoing engagement, community engagement around community desires and needs around programmatic investments throughout the process. And then we're hoping to, in the fall, to have some larger community conversations and bring in people that work in some of the field, in some of the areas that you're going to talk about, and bring in some broader expertise and other folks into that dialogue in the fall. So we held a couple forums this last spring with community organizations, and building off of all of the engagement work that we did during the regional transportation plan process, heard some specific areas that people wanted, that folks wanted us to focus on. And you heard a little bit of that tonight as well in testimony. A strong priority around safe walking and biking. More investments in technology. We heard some of that tonight. A bus priority. The ability to access data about when, about bus schedules, about frequency, so people can make choices. Increased transit service directly, but also greater affordability for transit. And then really making connections between our transportation investments and affordable housing, access to jobs, access to nature. Those summing up, those were the key themes we heard out of a series of community forums. And then you, of course, identified a series of key outcomes around reducing climate impacts, advancing racial equity, identifying ways of addressing displacement as we make transportation investments, improving safety, generating additional transit options, really is about transit options and bike ped options, options to get outside of a single occupancy vehicle as you make your commute, connecting the investments we make to economic growth and system connectivity, back to Mayor Knapp's theme of how do we make the system work for getting people to work and other places. And then back to the theme that we've heard from you as well as community of really leveraging investments that we're making in housing and that we might be making if a Parks Fund measure passes. So other regional and local investments, really thinking about how do these transportation investments leverage those. So again, the local investment teams are going to begin meeting actually this month. We're holding a couple orientation meetings for folks to come hear your values, the discussion that you've had, and orient them around the question that we're really asking them to tackle, which is evaluation of projects coming forward on the corridors. We'll come back in July with the task force to talk more specifically about programs after your input in your discussions tonight. And we will have Dave Metz, who's our pollster, come and talk about some of the polling work that we and others have done on transportation to kind of ground the conversation and what we're hearing from voters. We're going back in late July to Metro Council for our work session update, and then August 21st is when we're hoping to be able to get sort of a framework around the program discussion you have to advance back to the council. All right. I'm going to turn it over to Allison now, I think. Is that right?
Right. So it feels kind of cold in here. I know Jim Bernard was making motions of he's freezing. So part of what we want to do is there's been a lot of talking at you tonight. So to get you to talk to each other, so find a trio. That could be the two people that are sitting on either side of you. For example, 1, 2, 3. But find a little triad, and if you know that you're sitting next to someone that you know really, really well, and maybe you want to mix it up and go find another trio, feel free to move around. But we want to ask the task force, thinking about diving into regional programs, what are some of the things that emerge as important to you? We started off our very first task force meeting talking about values. And so to continue that conversation and applying that lens of values to region-wide programs, what are important things to you? And do you have any ideas of how region-wide programs can start to accomplish this? So hopefully just to get a sense of what's in the room, what people are thinking, to bring some of those to the table so that we can be set up for a productive conversation in July, because it's another one of those series of three meetings potentially to get to feedback to council. So not a lot of time necessarily for us to discuss, so to start that conversation now of, as a task force member, with your perspective, and the interest that you bring to the table, what are the things that emerge as important to you as we begin this conversation on region-wide programs? Does that make sense? Leslie, I feel like you're making that face of like, I don't know.
Could you just define for me what you consider a program so I have a really clear idea?
Yeah. Andy, can you go back to that slide? Maybe I think you have a slide on that.
You mean this one? So our Metro Council gave us some ideas that included a Safe Routes to School investment program. They talked about a program that could annually fund trail right-of-way acquisition and construction. So off roadway routes for folks to, in particular, bike, but you walk as well. They talked about technology investments, so getting signals timed, getting signal priority, potentially Wi-Fi access at transit stations, better information displays at transit state stops or transit stations so people can understand when the next bus comes. We've heard concepts like a Main Street investment program, so something that could help roadways, main streets, commercial corridors that aren't on the corridor list on an ongoing basis seek smaller amounts of funding to make improvements that could be related to economic development, could be related to safety, those kinds of investments. We've heard the idea of electrifying the bus fleet at a more rapid clip to try to address the climate and get a more green bus system. We've heard concerns about fares, whether it's for low-income households, for students on transit. Those are some examples that have come forward. We've heard about a general safety investment program. So again, outside the corridors that you've identified, are there places where local jurisdictions might come forward into a program and say, hey, we've identified a hotspot and we want to install flashing beacons to get people safely across this roadway, but we don't have the resources and we're not on a corridor that was identified.
So 6 years out from a successful bond measure, are there pots of money like that that could be deployed throughout the region through whatever process to advance those kinds of interests? Another area we heard from our council was in air quality. So that could range from simply better monitoring, so we know what baseline we're starting from. That could go to diesel emissions, other kinds of concerns around air quality. So that's a suite of concepts that we've heard both our council talk about and other folks talk about.
Can you just help me understand? You've got capital dollars that are going to fund like construction projects, and then you have capital dollars, I hear, also in programs. And is there a difference between that kind of spending?
There's no difference. The only technical difference is when you propose a bond, you have to spend that on an actual capital asset. You can't spend bonded dollars on programmatic work beyond planning and developing the project you're going to build, but then you have to build that project. So you can't take bond dollars and spend it on staff who are helping to plan future corridors, or you can't take it and get out in the schools and teach kids about bicycling. But you can spend ongoing resources of any kind on building a sidewalk or other capital projects.
Nolan had his card up first, but I do have a question pertaining to this topic.
Is there any guidance that you can provide about the balance that council or staff expects with respect to new projects or new programs versus existing programs?
So there are areas where the region and local governments have been working for some time and have some systems set up to put resources out to communities around trails and safe routes to schools. So from an administrative point of view, there is a savings to investing more deeply in programs like that. We would probably need to take some time to explore programmatic areas that don't have an existing administrative process or somebody who's overseeing it and understand what that might look like.
Well, just quickly following up, at least for me, it would be really helpful if Metro and the different cities could offer up a list of programs that they feel are underfunded that may be consistent with the values that this group's been discussing. I'd feel more comfortable with that than just us brainstorming a bunch of new programs, even though we may also want to do that.
So I think we were hoping tonight you'd spend a little time doing that brainstorming and that we could then come back with more information. We certainly have been, we've been talking about the Regional Transportation Plan for the previous 3 years. We know that we have a long way to go to fully fund our trail system. We know there's a strong need and desire in many communities to make safety improvements in key intersections. We know there's a long list of hoped for safe routes to schools that are not going to get fully funded under the state's program. We know that TriMet's working on electrifying its bus system, but they don't have the resources to do that as rapidly as they would hope to. So those are most of the ones that I've shared with you are programs we've heard about from our partners and from community and other organizations. But we're also interested in hearing other creative ideas that we could put some work behind and bring back to you in July.
I've got oodles of ideas. I want to go back to this conversation around funding that Mark Mayor Gamba brought up that I think I would like some clarity on. Are we going down this road of talking about different sorts of programs with a vague idea of what's capital and non-capital in order to inform what the funding stack could be, including creative new uses? I was looking at some of the public testimony, and I'm intrigued by an idea about SDCs for cars that are being re-registered in the metro area from out of state. I don't know how that works. That's an interesting idea. But, you know, would something like that come from a programmatic discussion in which we are putting forward creative ideas, understanding what needs to be funded in the region, and then building a stack of different funding sources that meets that need, or being limited in some capacity? And I'm hearing bond dollars being talked about, which does restrict the ability to bring forward oodles of cool ideas.
Okay, a few questions in there. Bond dollars can be spent in lots of different programmatic ways, but only on capital. So, for example, the Metro Council just referred a parks bond measure that has six different buckets of funding: land acquisition, improvements, a grant program, which would be a capital grant program for nature neighborhoods. There's a whole suite of different concepts in there for how the money gets spent, but it all still is bond dollars that have to be spent on capital. That's one example. Yes, I think our hope is that by identifying the kinds of programmatic investments that are supported by the community, desired by a broad array of partners, that we can then line that up against a series of potential revenue sources and ensure that we can actually fund those with the appropriate revenue sources, so that we're not... We do hope that informs the revenue conversation, yes. And both from the point of view of how much would need to be bonded versus how much could be ongoing resources on an annual basis.
That helps. Thank you.
And you know, you don't also have to bond every dollar that you want to spend on capital. You can have ongoing resources that are identified for projects. We've historically relied on property taxes, and the property tax bond is the way to go if you want to do capital projects, not a property tax levy. If there are other revenue sources that this task force, the Metro Council, and the voters would want to support, you can bond portions of that and not bond other portions of that. So there's room, I think, when we get to the revenue conversation to try to be creative and match up the things that you and our council want to fund with the appropriate funding sources.
Tim, do you have a question? So we have about 30 minutes left in our meeting, and I do want to give folks some time to talk to each other, but we'll take one final question before we jump into discussion.
Could you fund a pilot water taxi program?
Sure. I mean, yes, if the voters, if that outright
would meet the qualifications of...
Not under a bond, but under a different revenue source that's not bonded, yes.
So not under the bond.
Right. I mean, maybe the purchase of boats, for example, would be a capital expenditure, but the ongoing operations of a service like that would not be a bond fundable activity. Same thing with bus service. If you want to purchase new buses and they will last a long enough time, then you can capitalize that asset. But the ongoing operations to pay for a bus driver, which is the core of the service, you can't fund through a bond. You have to fund through some other revenue source.
Emma, do you want to comment on that?
Hi. Sometimes there's value in putting just a fine point on what may seem obvious to some in the room and maybe not to others, but this whole exercise is one where we have no idea the amount of money we're going to be working with. We just don't know. And there are constraints, there are new constraints on those realities. I was on those best practices trips to the other cities, and one thing that's true about all of those other cities is that they all have many, many, many other ways of collecting revenue than we do. Many ways. So we are in a different place, and this process is set up for us to have all of these conversations about values and programs and projects and corridors for a reason, ahead of having the conversation about how big the pie can be or the mechanisms related to that pie. So I know it's weird and I know it's uncomfortable, but I think we need to stay with that for a second and just have the revenue conversation when it's time to have the revenue conversation, but try to keep the conversation based in the reality of the format Metro has put forward, which is dream first and then get real later. And we're going to do that. And I think that's right. So I just want to put a point on that, that it's uncomfortable, it's awkward, and I think we have to do it anyway.
So to just underscore that point, this is a moment to think flexibly and to think about what could be, what kind of program investments could we add to the project level investments that will come forward through the corridor process, and to put aside the constraints of bonds versus not bonds and think about what you would like to advance.
So with that, I think that's our perfect segue to start dreaming, and Vivian's going to share her oodles of ideas with her small group.
So many.
So folks, and Leslie, too, you kind of started this off with a quizzical look. Do we feel comfortable with the question that you're being asked to kind of explore these ideas of programs and what's important to you? So find two buddies, make a trio, again, if you want to move around, go for it. If you find yourself in a pair, that's fine. And we'll take about 7 or 8 minutes for you to discuss and then come back and get a sense of the flavor of your conversations. So have fun. Go discuss. Members of the public, if you would also like to discuss with a buddy, go right ahead.
Description.
Well, when they're putting this out, this looks different than what I hear saying, which bothers me because it's not clear which factors are in fact going to be used to decide whether or not a given second tier can do anything.
I acknowledge that, but I've seen so much of this process change on the way that I'm wondering, you know, I'm viewing it as a living document now, so.
Sit up in the night. We got the staff that's forcing everybody here to consider what's on the table, what's on the ground, what's on the street, and no corridor, new corridor discussion happened. It's not allowed.
I think that's how it is. I think that's how it's going to be.
I think all speak so eloquently about climate change. During the beginning of the meeting. I mean,
because it's driven, you know. I mean, it's not the way it's structured.
Well, you can structure any way
no,
you
want. No, we can't. We can't. It's not going to work that way.
Then it's not going to be voted. Whatever you decide, you're not going to get voted in. It's going to be a waste of time.
That's possible.
It's going to be a waste of time because people want to see.
Depends on where you work, right? If you work in St. John's and you live in Gresham and you ride a bike, I hop on the green.
What we've already identified within our system.
I didn't have a chance to speak to that, but our study, our prospectus that we did from people from out of state, 80% of what we're trying to do can be paid privately because we can get FedEx and we can get Amazon.
So that's not credible until you show it. I think that's a rather remarkable statement given the billions.
There we go again. There we go again. Restrict.
This is kind of for them to do some work.
So, I feel like I've talked too much. I don't want to dominate the conversation. It seems to me that within the parameters of what they're talking about doing, one of the highest value things we could do would be to find ways to maximize use of alternative modes and public transit that we have. Because we're not going to be able to afford to build a lot more within this.
Just not to the exclusion of the few good ideas that are worth taking a flyer on. My friend just happened. I mean, you've got to have something.
Okay, you go ahead and check. Because there is a program with certain school districts where Portland, the school district, and
right.
stuff, and they get a pass for free.
Right.
But the youth, there is a youth pass program.
Sounds good. I just remember this from years back when it was free at one stage, right? There was a free youth pass program, and then it got refunded. And it was when I worked for the city, and it was a long time ago. So I remember 7 through 17, in which they have to have a proof of eligibility and show their ID in order to have the $1.25
a yeah, dollars
for a single pair.
Yeah. And then there's ways
and
through. And then there's ways to copy. Yeah.
Interesting. So,
Yeah, high school students can be FID and ride in high school year unlimited.
Yeah. Okay, that's right. Okay, so I didn't know how it worked any sure.
But that's because it's subsidized by the city of Portland, the school district, and the
FID. Someone's paid for it. CBS. CBS is the city of Portland.
Come on, group, become a statewide sales tax.
See, now, that's another source. Do you really think there's upside to going there?
No, not at all. Not in this setting.
So that's why it's a dream when we know the reality is that we have X and Y. That's all we have. Maybe even only X. So it's pretty
So that's why I keep coming around. And like, you know, there really isn't room to think about billions of dollars. So we don't system is incomplete,
so I get to the end of a segment where I know where it's functional.
I've been in cities.
Where do I go next? Is there a way to connect? Can I use surface streets to get from here to the next lane?
And then I'm like finding like the car plugins, you have a map with all of those.
I'm trying to think about the
state's route or green or whatever pathway. Most efficient and safest. And also, I'm curious, so like jurisdictionally, could we take the on-street parking and basically shift the cars over so that way we're not going
and
all things that are,
Then you can get somebody interested in
the north, but they can't go east and west.
Yeah, there's highway fun to get over to the west side.
There you go.
My buddy did that back in outside of Baltimore. They lived on a cul-de-sac. They called the city for like 2 years trying to get them to fill the crap.
I'm on the west side.
So they wound up just calling their own paving company. They split the cost with all people in that cul-de-sac and they covered it up and then the city fined them. Yes. They did it the wrong way. And they did it. They had a union guy. They had it done properly or whatever. They paid the fine too and just kept moving. But they're
right. I mean, I think
and even with the fine, it's probably cheaper than if this is.
Yeah, probably. So how do you get more people to look at riding transit? Why don't people use transit? Unfamiliarity?
Yes.
Fear. Let's take another minute or two. We'll take another minute or two to share our final thoughts.
Implementation in many transit districts actually costs more than implement than it is to just like take away the barrel. just that everybody wants more. And I think the congestion is my best.
Because you've been putting in federal dollars to subsidize. Okay.
You got to get federal transit money to get
first off. And reporting to
people,
but then
who
does that?
All right, task force. I'm going to ask you to come back together, share your final thoughts, and we'll hear from each other for a minute. Task force, let me share your final thoughts. We'll get Pam back up here.
Thanks,
Andy. All right. So it seemed like there was a robust conversation happening around the table. But I'd love to just get, even if it's just a few words or ideas, we have about 15 minutes left on our agenda. I know that there are some next steps that we want to talk about in terms of scheduling. So if we can go around and get here from tables, just kind of a sense of the flavor of the conversation or something that emerged. From folks. So can we start, actually? Sorry?
Andy's going to take as we need it.
Perfect. Here you go. Can we start right here, maybe, and go around, and
okay,
we'll go around this way?
We were a duo, not a trio, but we covered it. Yeah. So we started talking about the idea of programs and how we tie them into the values that was on one of the other slides. And one of the things that Nate brought up was, like, when are we going to get to the conversation, the part of the conversation as we're talking about this transportation measure, of not just, like, what we're trying to build, but how we're going to build it and who's going to be building it and making sure that those economic benefits and that economic opportunity is coming to the communities that we want it to. So we were talking about potentially one of the programs that we could do would be looking at the construction pipeline and how we can make investments in growing that pipeline and more opportunities through that, through a program. We also talked about the idea of anti-displacement and leveraging other investments, and how land acquisition is really one of the only proven ways of having anti-displacement, of actually acquiring land in areas so that people aren't going to get, you know, over or costed out of the areas they're living in. So looking at land acquisition, and maybe this is one of those ways that we can leverage the other investments that have already been made through the housing affordable housing bond, and seeing if there's a connection there in terms of meeting our anti-displacement goals. And then the other one for me was, you know, just always the safe routes and making investments in safety programs is a really high priority. So those were our things.
And real quick, I'll just add this one little piece. I think the one thing that we should be considering is how we land bank around some of these corridors, because it's hard to dream in communities of color when you've seen devastation like on MLK as well as Williams in Vancouver, where these were corridors improved and all the big developers came in and pretty much displaced this community. So it's hard to dream big, to be honest with you, but we're here to try to think about how we can be intentional and honestly create that runway because right now we're having a lot of 10,000 foot conversation, which is good, but the runway starts now. And that means what are we spending money on as well as, you know, construction goals, how we're going to do housing, because I don't understand what anti-displacement means unless we're intentionally buying land and not letting developers come in and buy it first. So I would hope we would have some very deep dive very quickly, because I'm only a dreamer when I know there's a vision already in place.
Thank you. Can we move on to the next group? And I know, Pam, you were part of that one.
So we talked about a number of issues. The first one was one of the thoughts that came to my mind, I think, which was higher level, not as concrete as yours, Nate, was around really that nexus of the affordable housing and transportation kind of policies, and what are the capital investments needed to really enhance that connective tissue between those two? Like, what are the actual concrete things that need to be invested in? And I think, you know, the land idea is a great one. So that was just a general theme that came to my mind. We also talked a little bit about, Commissioner Treese had a good idea, really about the empowering the youth voices. We've had a lot of really profound and great testimony from youth that have come before us over the last few months. And how are there programs that really help enable those voices to be heard, and perhaps not only the voices that are maybe most well placed among youth to be heard, but the minority voices that might not have the opportunities to or the knowledge on really how to connect to a political process like this and really help inform it. What were the other ones that we talked about, Catherine?
We liked Nolan's suggestion of having a base, like a list of the existing programs, just so we weren't completely operating in a vacuum about what there is today. Not to be constrained by that, but to say if things are working well or things could be expanded. The example that we used was safe routes to schools, but what about, and maybe this exists, but what about enabling people who are going to have new bike infrastructure to get from where they work to where they live and vice versa, but there isn't a safe routes to work kind of come into, you know, there's the bike commute challenge and all these things, but are there programs that can give people access to bicycles and helmets and kind of let them test it out and do safety rides? So expanding on programs that we know are working and we want to keep funding, but maybe tweaking them a little bit or expanding them to broader audiences. So if we had a list to kind of seed our thinking on it, it would be maybe helpful for the next round of discussion. I think that was it.
I think there was also we also talked briefly about the idea of a program that helps educate the public on the different modes of travel, different mobility options out there. You know, we recognize that I think it started with the comment that there are many folks in certain communities that might not know how to use transit, how the systems work, and just know how much it costs. And if there were kind of a one-stop shop program that helped identify all of those different modes and the values of each, it might be useful. So that was the other one.
Thank you. And just, I'm looking at the time, and I know one thing Pam feels really strongly about is making sure that you're able to go back to your lives and your families on time. So I'd invite the next couple groups to practice the fine art of brevity. But you're doing great so far. So pass over to Norman.
Great. People have already spoken about anti-displacement programs, so we liked that too, combined with mixed income TOD, so along the lines of what we discussed, the last two groups discussed. We also talked about safety programs, including speed cameras that may fund safety programs, safety islands and accessibility improvements, electrification of the TriMet bus fleet, helping to fund the congestion pricing programs, and possibly related to that, air quality monitoring, and then TriMet transit service enhancement for frequency, geography, youth pass, transit information, and then finally transit center improvements, including restrooms and rectifying what we heard was potentially insufficient park and ride spaces on the Orange Line.
All right, Sheila.
In the decisions about what, where money can be best spent over time, and that may not be something that potentially wasn't the one that hardwired all of us time to transportation planners without having a definite engagement. And I just think the best way to increase ridership is to put down some affordable housing contracts. We didn't talk about that, but we all meant to teach it. And also, by the way,
thank you. Next.
So we all agreed on three basic areas of concern that would be safety and climate, which are, I think, much easier to strive toward than our third item, which is equity, which is something that is more complex and multifaceted, and there's less agreement, and it doesn't always look the same way everywhere you go. So equity in where we're investing, equity in who gets to enjoy the benefits, equity in who, as far as affording them or being able to physically access them. And so I'll just mention four items that we talked about. One would be a real investment in anti-displacement efforts, and I agree that land banking is an essential component to that, but the city of Portland actually adopted 11 anti-displacement measures, and land banking is one of them. Tenant protections is also very important. It's hard to stem the tide of displacement if you haven't protected people and stabilized them in the housing they have. Accelerating the electrification of both transit and non-transit vehicles, because I don't think that zero carbon by 2050 is our goal anymore. We've got to do it faster. Third would be accessibility for people with disabilities, and finally, free public transit. We need to get people on the bus. And we think that that's one of the besides delivering transit where they need it, that's one of the best ways to do it.
Thank you. We had a group of four over here.
Yeah. So in order to combine with the efforts we're going to make to have buses be able to move more swiftly on some of those routes, having more frequent and a more robust transit system, a broader reaching transit system, fareless transit for sure. So we're in agreement with several of the groups so far. Expanding the Safe Routes to School program. Also expanding or speeding up the electrification of the bus system. Safe separated bike and micro-mobility path system. So throughout the region, creating more spring water corridors throughout the region for the e-scooters, e-bikes, bikes, all the various things that people are using to get around. And then micro-transit in the neighborhoods, like jitneys that are a first-mile, last-mile solution for neighborhoods, for particularly when you get into elderly folks, a lot of times won't use some of those other micro-mobility devices, but they might get on a little bus.
You're playing the game of who gets to talk.
We had some of the same ideas that we've heard. I know one of the ideas that was thrown out was talking about moving the bike lanes to the inside of the cars. So that's an infrastructure that we already have. Some of the reason that suppresses that use of transit is the fact that people don't feel safe. So it addresses the safety concern that we're one of our overriding factors. We also talked about the funding mechanisms. There was some wondering where, when this goes all the way through, how we will actually divide it up and who we will charge for this, since we can't go all the way property, and what are the fees going to be based on. And so we had some practical concerns about how that's going to look, even though we're not supposed to look at the money yet. But and other of our transit ideas were, did I miss, I know we talked about, that was one physical example, but what was the other? I thought there was one more. I'm sorry. Oh, yes, there was another tool for transit riders, automatic passenger counting. It is kind of revenue-based, but if we have that to actually track how much, there's a tool where, you know, when butts in the seat is what the phraseology was, but, you know, by being in the seat, you get counted, and that will provide you access to some additional federal funding if you can actually justify that your ridership is going up as a result of some of the steps you're taking along the way, so...
Okay. Thank you.
Button seat.
Yeah. I just worked on my own list, Linda.
Co-sign with what I've heard here, strongly co-sign with the anti-displacement measures. We talked a lot about getting transit to move better through our current system. So, yes, up with riders, with signal prioritization, bat lanes, and curb cuts. Expansion of free youth transit through the Youth Pass program.
That's great. Okay, perfect. Yes, you're concise. Absolutely. Caught me by surprise. Thank you. All your thoughts and feedback and your brevity. And back over to our chairs.
30 seconds. First of all, we've had some trouble with people that are attending these Wednesday night meetings and then turning around and coming back really early on the next day for JPAC meetings. So there's going to be a survey sent out, if that's okay with you, to ask people which day in July would be the best day for us to meet. In July, there's been a lot of input and a lot of requests for information on survey results and focus group results. So Dave Metz is going to come to our next meeting and talk to us about what the polling indicates. The other thing that's going to happen next time is we'll continue this discussion of region-wide programs. Are there any questions? Because now we're 20 seconds over. I didn't hear you.
I thought we weren't meeting in July.
No, we are meeting.
Okay, so we'll be determining what the date is. You'll have that vote. Please travel safely, and we'll see you next month. Thank you for your participation.
Thank you, everybody.